In 2021, the World Health Organization reported that 1 in 7 children between 10 and 19 years old experiences a mental health disorder. Zach Irwin is here today to talk about the warning signs and symptoms of mental health disorders among the adolescent population. He is a counselor at Oakview Behavioral Health Services. This is Southwest General Health Talk. I'm Caitlin White. Well, it's great to have you back on the show today, Zach. My first question for this episode is, at what age can the development of a mental health disorder begin?
Fantastic question. Something that people don't realize, we do have our different categories of mental health disorders. We have mood disorders, behavioral disorders, trauma-related disorders, so on and so on. And if we're considering all mental health disorders, to be honest, they can begin within a few months of birth. There's something known as reactive attachment disorder, where you may not see certain behaviors present until a little bit later in life, pre-adolescence and those kind of things. But what we know about how it works is it has to do with the relationships that you form from the time you're born with your caregiver. So those that have unstable or unreliable relationships with caregivers, having a caregiver being in and out or transitioning caregivers throughout life, those first few months are incredibly important to the point that we've identified there are disorders that start then. Trauma-related disorders, in my personal experience, I've worked with somebody as young as 2 years old that was displaying symptoms of trauma, including there was a lot of stress and anxiety. There was trichotillomania that was happening for this two-year-old. And so, yeah, these disorders, some of them you won't see until later in life. Maybe personality disorders we typically reserve for at least usually 18 years old. There's some exceptions to that, but others can begin extremely early on.
Wow, I did not know that. Thank you for telling us. So then what seems to be the most common red flags that people pose when battling mental health issues? I know you mentioned a few right there.
Yeah, so as far as red flags go, especially with the majority of the work I do is with the adolescent population, isolation is a big one. And I say that with a grain of salt because we do want to differentiate between typical adolescent development compared to what might be clinically significant. If your 15-year-old likes to eat dinner in their room by themselves, that's not something that would be considered clinically significant on its face. Versus if somebody tends to isolate, does not want to, every family activity that comes up, they don't want to participate in, there's these low moods. Isolation to the extreme is definitely a red flag that we want to look out for. The other one that I think can go unnoticed at times is what we call a future-oriented perspective. We always want people to be looking towards the future, whether that's tomorrow, next weekend, 5 years from now, whatever it is. So when somebody starts to lack that future-oriented perspective, that kind of gives us an indicator that whatever's happening right now in the moment is a little bit more insurmountable and kind of the main focus of these things, that they've kind of lost the perspective of, oh, there is tomorrow, or there is next year, or next week, whatever it may be. Along with that, the one other one I would throw out there, it's a term that we use called anhedonia, which just describes the loss of interest or the loss of pleasure in certain things that used to really make you happy or used to really be enjoyable. So if you have somebody that art was their passion, and you've noticed, hey, you're not drawing as much, hey, you're not painting as much, so on and so on, that's kind of an indicator that, you know, what's going on right now? Something's up.
Those are some good things to look out for. Now, there is a growing concern that mental health concerns may cause harmful aggression towards others or even self-inflicted violence. How should those who acknowledge those behaviors handle the situation of seeking proper care from healthcare professionals like yourself?
So a large part of this actually comes down to stigma. There's been study after study after study published that show it's actually quite the opposite for those that struggle with mental health. They're more than twice as likely to be a victim of a violent crime compared to a regular person, more so than be a perpetuator of a violent crime compared to the regular person. So unfortunately, that does generate a lot of stigma, and that needs to be addressed through spreading knowledge of these things, through us having the resources to go talk to people to let them know, hey, we found this out through research over and over and over. So As far as the self-inflicted violence goes, yeah, that's a little bit more of a concern, especially when it comes to depression and anxiety at times too, where the intensity of the emotion is so overwhelming that your brain is telling you, let's do this thing, let's cause self-harm, and maybe we'll stop feeling what we're feeling. And so that's also, again, we've talked about negative coping skills in the past. That's a negative coping skill that can be utilized. And unfortunately, like we've said before, if it helps in alleviating those feelings, it's just cementing in your brain that, oh, this is a viable option for us to return to in the future. So as far as acknowledging these behaviors and seeking proper care, we definitely want to address the correct levels of care. There are differences in the options that are out there. There's school-based counseling, which is usually pretty much towards the bottom. It's pretty low intensity, maybe 30-minute sessions, give or take. There's individual therapy, or what we would call outpatient therapy, and that's your standard is maybe once a week for an hour, maybe once every other week for an hour. And then you escalate from there. So what we offer at Southwest, we have intensive outpatient therapy, which is 3 days a week for 3 hours each day. We also have a partial hospitalization program for adults that is 5 days a week for 4 hours each day. And then escalating above that, there is psychiatric inpatient hospitalizations, which Southwest offers for adults. And that's a high intensity, low duration level of care. All of this to say that we need to make sure that we're being in the right level of care when we're addressing certain behaviors that are happening. If self-harm is occurring, if there's been serious trauma that's taken place, I don't know that I would recommend school-based counseling, especially in the context of sending a child to go talk about their trauma and these awful events that have happened for 30 minutes and then saying, all right, well, have a good rest of your day in class. There's a little bit more that needs to go into it in that.
No, absolutely. A great point there. Now, for those who are working on the betterment of their mental health, what are some important questions or points of reflection that should be taken to allow oneself to acknowledge that therapy or some form of treatment would be a healthy option?
This is actually a really good reference to what we call the stages of change. There's five stages that kind of assess how a person's readiness to change, or there's also another technique of therapy called motivational interviewing that does the same. So when we do this, there's the pre-contemplative stage, which is a person is unaware or unwilling to recognize that something that's happening is causing an issue. And then we move to the contemplative stage, which is where you recognize, okay, this might be a problem, but I don't really know what to do about it. From there, you have planning, action, maintenance, and relapse can also be a part of that cycle too. So when we're asking ourselves, what am I looking for when it comes to treatment, and how do I know that this is going to be a healthy option? First things first, I would really encourage people to establish goals. Having some type of that future-oriented perspective, having some type of thought of what is it that I really want to work to. Going into therapy without goals, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. You'll actually find that in those situations, you're going to be developing goals pretty quickly and pretty early on, because we want to have a target. We want to know what people's baselines are. How did you used to be able to function that you no longer can't function in that way? And that gives us something to work towards, something measurable that we can progress towards. So I would say questions to ask ourselves to reflect on going into treatment. What do I want to be different? Do I have a plan, but maybe I don't know how to get there? And if the answer to that is yes, then you know that's a pretty good indicator that we're ready for therapy, because therapy does come down to timing. So if you have an idea in mind that you want to achieve and you're really just struggling on, oh, I don't have the skills for this, or I don't know what to do, therapy would be great in those instances too.
So can you tell us more about what healthcare institutions are doing to better educate the community, and primarily those schools where children are so densely located?
Yeah, so one of the great things that I truly appreciate about Southwest is the abilities they've given me to go out and do some community education, do some advocacy for mental health and mental health treatment. So schools being willing to take in these quote-unquote outsiders, we're not school staff, we're not a part of their workforce, and sometimes schools do a pretty good job of having maybe different agencies involved, different therapists coming there. But we want to make sure that we're creating a mutual understanding of the importance of mental health treatment. And schools, at least the ones that I've been fortunate enough to work with, have been so receptive to those things. They've come out and let me do staff trainings. They've come out and let me give presentations and talks. Schools are really looking, and again, just in my experience, they're really looking for help in these areas because they're identifying that they can benefit from partnerships with healthcare institutions that have experience in working in mental health. We need people that are willing to go out there and talk to these schools, to present to schools, to train staff. As much as teachers are around kids, if they don't get extensive training on how to deal with certain mental health issues, especially in crisis. So having people who are qualified to go out and do those things, I mean, those partnerships are really invaluable for the kids.
Well, on that note, how can parents and guardians also advocate for their child when that child is neglecting or driving away from receiving any assistance or help?
This is the million-dollar question. Again, with working with adolescents, a lot of the patients that I see could be described as treatment-resistant to an extent. And so as a parent, part of this is about understanding how therapy works and what the intention is. Therapists, as a whole, we're here to help people who are interested in receiving help with their mental health. Forced treatment does not typically have good outcomes. So as a parent, if you really know that your kid would benefit from therapy and it's the kicking and screaming, I don't want to do this, I don't want to go, you can't make me go, so on and so on, rather than forcing the treatment in those circumstances, it's more so about providing the support as a parent. Be understanding, be willing to listen. And that doesn't mean to deviate from, you know, how you feel and how you see fit to raise your child, but knowing that if we're trying to set up the best possible chance of success, that trying to force somebody into treatment is not how we get there.
Of course. Well, Zach, one last question for you here today. What type of programs and initiatives does Southwest General offer to help adolescents suffering from mental health disorders?
So we have for our adolescents an IOP program, which stands for Intensive Outpatient. This program is 8 weeks long, give or take. We meet the individual's needs. So if people need more than 8 weeks, we do what we can to accommodate that. If people feel like their issues are resolved sooner than that, we're able to discharge sooner than that too. But that program runs 3 days a week from 4:30 to 7:30 on Monday, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. Throughout that program, we use primarily what's called DBT, which stands for Dialectic Behavioral Therapy. In that, we review skills that are related to mindfulness, so things like grounding, relaxation, meditation, those kind of things. Interpersonal effectiveness, which is just a fancy way of saying your relationships with other people, so things like communication, boundaries, those, you know, types of skills. Emotion regulation, which are the skills that help people remain in charge of their emotions instead of letting their emotions run the show. And distress tolerance, which are skills that are used to get through those high stress situations and make it to the other side of them. So we have that 8-week program, and we have a lot of awesome resources that have been provided to us. I wanted to give a special thanks to Wayne and Debbie Brissell, who have been massive supporters and donors to the program and identifying mental health needs in the community and using our program as an outlet to help support those needs and meet those needs. So that's what we have for adolescents currently.
Well, Zach, thank you so much for joining us again and for all you do at Southwest General. If you believe you or a loved one is suffering from a mental health disorder, reach out to our team at Oakview Behavioral Health Services to schedule a free assessment. Visit swgeneral.com to learn more. I'm Caitlin White, and this was Southwest General Health Talk.